Let's say you love playing music. Let's say you form a band because you love playing music. Let's say you're a man who wears his hair long because that's what your musical influences do. And let's say you play loud, weird, surreal rock and jazz songs because that's the kind of music you like. Great. Now, let's say you do all that in a country that has laws against it. The government owns all music equipment and studios. Bands must have licenses to use them and to play official gigs. And to get that license, you have to keep your hair short, play soft, positive pop music, and be grateful for the opportunities. So what happens when you don't follow those rules? When instead you follow the long line of musicians around the world and across time that defy the status quo, that want to express themselves in their way. What happens then? You might accidentally start a revolution. How did a band in Soviet Czechoslovakia kick off a revolt against repression? How did young Czech people in the 1970s look to the counterculture of the U.S. for inspiration? And what can we learn from the band The Plastic People of the Universe and their role in the Velvet Revolution about the role of art in resistance? From Rebel Yell Creative, this is The Art of Resistance, a podcast about using writing, music, and all kinds of art to resist the status quo. I'm your host and producer, Amy Lee Lillard, and I'm an author, a podcaster, and middle-aged queer autistic weirdo who's been obsessing over artists who resisted since I was a kid. And today, I'm looking to make all the dangerous art and help others do the same. To understand Czechoslovakia in the 1970s, we first need to back up a few decades. In 1945, the Allies had liberated Western Europe from Nazi rule, and the Soviet Army had liberated Eastern Europe. World War II was over. But after the war, Stalin and the Soviets kept control over Eastern Europe. The Soviets installed communist leaders, and for all intents and purposes, the new country of East Germany, along with Poland, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, and Czechoslovakia, became part of the Soviet Union. Among many things, that meant repression of speech, culture, and political freedom. Over the years, these new Soviet states would try to push back. But in 1956, when Hungarians protested and Soviet tanks crushed them, fear spread across the satellite states. Then, in 1968, things started changing in Czechoslovakia. Alexander Dubček became the new Communist Party leader in the country. But he was a reformer at heart. He wanted to create, quote, socialism with a human face, the best of both worlds. Keep the socialist Soviet framework, but allow more political, economic, and cultural freedoms. The changes came at the right time. Students in particular were increasingly speaking up, testing the limits on art and culture. So immediately under Dubček, limits on the press lifted. citizens could meet openly to discuss politics. Human rights groups and other long outlawed groups restarted. Western culture was welcomed in with its artistic expression and rock music. The Prague Spring was here. But Soviet leadership in Moscow was not happy. They thought loosening their grip even a little would mean rebellion in the Czech state, which would spread across their Eastern Europe empire. They thought it could be the perfect opportunity for Americans to pounce, make another battlefield in the Cold War. So in August of 1968, the Soviets invaded Czechoslovakia. Tanks plowed their way through the streets of Prague. And to ensure other countries didn't follow the example, Soviets also invaded Poland, Bulgaria, and Hungary. The Czech people pushed back against the invasion in nonviolent and annoying ways, like removing road signs so that the invading troops would lose their way. But ultimately, the Soviets won. They expelled Dubček and installed a conservative Soviet leader. All reforms were reversed. Normalization was the new catchword, meaning back to the normal of censorship and repression. A few weeks after the invasion, Milan Hlavsa, a bassist, formed a band. They called themselves the Plastic People of the Universe. Milan was heavily inspired by the U.S. musicians The Velvet Underground. So the music the Plastics played, it was hard rock, prog rock, psychedelic rock, played by musicians speaking both Czech and English. The music was also silly and surreal. The performances were camp and theatrical. They wore lace gowns and capes, makeup on their faces. They kept their hair long. And all of that was a problem right off the bat. This is a 2017 interview with Radio Free Europe with band member Vratislav Brabečnik.
Mocli jsme se v té pozici takových nějakých pronásledovaných záškodníků a partizánů, což nikdo nebyl z nás, jako žádný partizán, žádný odbojář. Ne?
He said, "We found ourselves being persecuted as troublemakers or partisans, which none of us ever were. We were never partisans or resistance fighters." In the new hardline Czech government, musical acts had to get a license to perform and access state-provided instruments. And to get that license, they had to follow some very tight rules. Number one, they were required to play soft pop music and follow, quote, gentle melodic lines. Number two, lyrics had to be submitted for approval. Number three, performers were mandated to maintain a conservative appearance. That meant no long hair for men. Number four, bands were not allowed to sing in English. And number five, bands were not allowed to play music genres with, quote, life-destroying effects and, quote, unacceptable excessive levels of noise. the Plastics broke all those rules. And even though their lyrics weren't explicitly anti-government, the group became political simply by their failure to cut their hair, to sing in only Czech, to play soft pop. They were political because they played music that was against the rules. So their license was revoked. That didn't stop the band, though. The Plastics performed at illegal underground venues, private parties, weddings, school discos. Sometimes they advertised their shows as lectures about the Velvet Underground so they could fly under the radar. In 1972, they were outright banned in Prague, so they moved to smaller villages and towns in the countryside. They played in barns and farmhouses. Members left, new members joined, but fans kept coming, traveling wherever the band might pop up. The band recorded an album in an old castle in the countryside, filling the record with music that was surreal and experimental. The finished record was scratchy and poor quality, because it had to be. They couldn't access legal recording equipment or studios, but fans didn't care. Just like the Samizdat underground of outlawed books, which was thriving at this time, fans of the Plastics passed along poor quality dupes of the album, like a Samizdat of music. Although the band was underground, over the years police would invariably find them, raiding the events and beating and interrogating concert goers. This is Brabičnik again.
Kdyby nás nechali být, tak jsme zmizeli jako spousta jiných skupin, ale oni tím, že do toho začali šťourat, tak já myslím, že to byla chyba ve scénáři, jejich teda.
He said, if they had left us alone, we would have disappeared, like a lot of groups. The fact that they started stirring things up, I think that was a mistake in the script they had written. Then, in 1976, after playing the Festival of the Second Culture, police arrested the entire band, plus dozens of other musicians, and they interrogated over 100 fans at the festival. The arrest of the Plastics made big news in the country and outside. The trials themselves weren't open to the public. Most weren't. But many people showed up to the courthouse anyway. They sat in the foyer or milled around. They were fans. They were writers. They were people sick to death of the government's crackdown. All of them just sitting around, talking to each other. The Plastics were quickly sent to prison for singing, quote, vulgar lyrics and, quote, organized disturbance of the peace. But another story had started. Those people who showed up at the Plastics trial, who had connected with one another over their love of culture and anger at the government. In 1977, many of them got together to write a manifesto. They called this document Charter 77. And in it, they stated the need for basic human rights and a government that honored them. This is Brabičnik again.
Když jsem si to poprvé přečet, tak jsem řekl takový normální takový dopis, že není něco v pořádku. To nebylo jako vyzvání k revoltě, nebo že nastane úplná, jako že to tady rozsekáme. Nebo. A tak jsem, ale tušil jsem, že z toho bude velký průser, což se mi splnilo.
He said, when I first read Charter 77, I said to myself, it's such a normal letter. I didn't see anything wrong with it. It wasn't a call for revolt that we were going to bring everything crashing down. But I did have a feeling that it was going to cause a lot of trouble, which turned out to be the case. Among the organizers of Charter 77 was a man named Václav Havel. He was a playwright during this time, one in a burgeoning underground of absurdist theater. After the arrest of the Plastics, he came to the trial with all the others, and he spoke out in favor of the band. At the time, he said, "An attack on the Czech musical underground was an attack on the most elementary and important thing, something that bound everyone together. The freedom to play rock music was understood as a human freedom." Havel and other signatories of Charter 77 were arrested and sent to prison. Among the Plastics, members spent up to 8 months in jail. Their manager spent 18. After release, one band member was deported, and others left the country, including Brbečnik.
Takže noční návštěva, já jsem řekl, za toho přepadení naší kamarádky v bytě málem teda ukopali. Tak jsem říkal, jak jedem, a STBáci říkali ve čtvrt na dvě nějaký někdy. Říkali, no o tom, jestli odjedete, o tom rozhodujeme my. Nebylo to jednoduché, že odjíždíš ze své země a víš, že odjíždíš navždy.
He said, "The police came to our apartment at night. On top of that, they nearly kicked a friend of ours to death. I told the secret police that we'd leave, and they said, we'll be the ones to decide if you go or not. It wasn't easy. Leaving your country, and for all you know, it could be forever." The years went on. The Plastics still played, with new members and more secrecy. And Václav Havel and others continued to meet and write. By the mid-1980s, though, the Soviet Union was changing. Gorbachev was leading glasnost, scaling back censorship and restrictions, particularly in art and culture. He was also taking a hands-off approach to the Eastern European countries under Soviet rule. And in each of these countries, the communist leaders had grown corrupt and complacent. The combination of all these things, along with growing dissent in many of these countries, meant 1989 was a wild, historic year. One by one, the people of East Germany, Poland, Hungary, Romania, and Bulgaria revolted. Hardline leaders, most of whom were convinced they were untouchable and that the people loved them, were forced out or stepped aside. And in Czechoslovakia, after mounting pressure, the Communist Party ceded control. Soon after, Václav Havel, that writer and the fan of the Plastic People of the Universe, was elected president of his country. So, what does this mean for us? The Plastics weren't setting out to start a resistance movement. They weren't actively speaking out against the government. They just wanted to play music that they liked, that they felt excited about. They knew it was weird and odd and all the things, and that's what they loved about it. Their resistance to tyranny came from simply wanting to stay true to themselves. They didn't want to play the type of music that was mandated by the government. They didn't want to look like the moral and upstanding Soviet. They didn't want to follow the rules. What rock musician does? The government demanded conformity. The Plastics defied that conformity. And by staying weird and odd and even silly, that became an act of resistance. one that inspired legions of young people and secret nonconformists looking for a better way. The Plastics created a place for thinking, seeing, and being different. A place where the weirdos and the resistors could play, and then think bigger. Just being who they were, the Plastics inspired a playwright and future president. They set off a chain of events that would lead to that boring, conformist, dangerous government's end. Art sparked a nonviolent means of protest that lasted for years and finally won out. The end of Soviet rule in Czechoslovakia was called the Velvet Revolution because it was nonviolent and smooth, but also because it had the catalyst of a band that was inspired by the Velvet Underground. That's the power of art as resistance. Just by existing, it can set an example and create a rallying cry. It can show us that there's another world out there, one where we can be ourselves. The Art of Resistance is a podcast for the artists, the lovers of art, and people who want to resist but don't know how. These stories are designed to help us find inspiration from the past and empower us all to find some hope for today and tomorrow. I'm Amy Lee Lillard, and I wrote, narrated, and produced this show. And there's so much more to this story. At RebelYellCreative.com, you'll find sources, images, and videos for this episode and all the others. Plus, at RebelYellCreative.com, there's a full resistance library with posters and art to download, places to explore online, and journals and kits to get in the mail. Here's an easy way to get more art as resistance. Sign up for the free newsletter at RebelYellCreative.com and get stories and tips every week. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.